You're listening to Everything Horses and More podcast with me, your host, Caroline Best. I am the founder of my Dove Horsemanship Method, a pioneer in horse training and development, and a true advocate of the horse. I bring an intuitive and educated eye, along with an experienced and intelligent perspective, to understanding both horse and human nature and behavior. My experience and skill sets are the cornerstone to my worldwide success in training methodology. My experience with horses as intelligent, sentient beings is what inspired me to create my highly acclaimed and proven training method, Consensual Partnership Training for Horses and Humans, a model I pioneered in 2008. Consensual Partnership Training provides a comprehensive and impressive curriculum teaching horse owners how to fully develop their horses using a holistic, empathetic, and natural process. My training system teaches you how to achieve true partnership with horses and without the use of pain, excessive pressure, dominance, force, or coercion. In addition to being a world-class trainer for both horses and people, I'm an artist, author, entrepreneur, speaker, radio show host, licensed working equitation trainer, and riding foundation specialist. I offer one of the largest and most comprehensive online educational platforms, the Dal of Horsemanship, where I host a variety of courses produced and personally taught by me and my amazing schoolmasters. In addition to sharing what I know in my in-person training and online courses, I invite special guests and students each month to my radio show, Everything Horses and More podcast. This platform allows us to engage with all of you and share our very personal and transformational journey with horses. I invite you to listen in and hope you find something that helps inspire you to reach your personal goals and aspirations with your horse. Thank you, and may you always be one with horses. All right. Welcome back, everybody, to Everything Horses and More podcast. Today, it's just me, your host, Caroline Best, founder of Dal Horsemanship. This is kind of an impromptu podcast, meaning Lydia doesn't even know about it. It's just between me and one of my students, Sarah. Say hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Yeah, Sarah's my guest speaker, but Sarah's also going to be interviewing me. And you're using this for school?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. What project?
It is a senior thesis project.
Oh, how exciting. Senior thesis project. And so our thesis, our conversation, our podcast today is the My Art of Lunging, what that means, the art of lunging via the Dal of Horsemanship way. And Sarah sent me a bunch of questions, and I'd like to let Sarah know that I am absolutely blown away by the questions. They are so well thought out, intelligent, and as a student of my Dal of Horsemanship Method, which is my Mastery Membership Riding Foundation program, and you are a student, It's obvious. I am so proud of you and pleased to announce, you know, what an ardent, committed student you are of the program, because the questions are so well thought out. It's obvious, you know, you listen, you've been studying the program, and I'm excited because, you know, they're just great questions. And this is a great topic. It's definitely a topic. Lunging is a topic that most trainers talk about, right, Sarah? What's your experience? Yeah, I mean, what's your experience? Because you've been a student of mine for quite a while. What are you, 17 or 18?
17.
You have one more year of school. Mm-hmm. And you'll graduate. So you've been a student of mine for, my gosh, 5 years now. You always ask amazing questions. So I know you're out there looking at other people, other trainers. So real quick, for our viewers and listeners,
What do you see before we get through all these questions? I mean, what do you see in as far as a difference, a positive difference between, you know, what you're learning in my method, the benefits, the value compared to what else is being presented out there?
The first off, it's the relationship, because in other methods, there's either like force, or like what you see with some trainers, or you see a lot of treat training, and a lot of people will talk about connection and liberty and authenticity, and then you'll see them, you know, giving their horses tons of treats to like keep them with them and connected. And with your method, you create a space for which like the horse is, they want to be with you and they feel good in your presence and they're very relaxed. And with the lunging too, a lot of people will just send their horses out and they won't ask for a specific thing. They just want to run their horses. And in your method, it's very purposeful. And you see your horses, they're stretching, they're developing muscle. They're connected to your precise embodiment of what movement you want. And they're arcing in the close lunge, and they're very, very connected. And then you see a lot of other people just running their horses around, trying to get them relaxed, I guess, for their ride. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in the basics, I think most people, you know, even if you're studying some of the very well-known clinicians and trainers, there is a big difference. And that's why I call it the art, because there's a lot of technique and a lot of mechanics and a lot of specifics, very close to dressage, which I follow, but, you know, I do it in a way, both lunging and riding, where we have the most minimal of aids, and the entire development of the horse and human together, you know, it's a development process together. And as I say in the method, and we'll talk a little bit more about it in this interview, I am developing you, the rider, to ride the movement. You know, I'm developing you on the ground through my lunging. I'm developing the horse and you. I'm developing the movement before you ride the movement. I can't emphasize that enough. It too often in lunging, we might be looking for the same goals in lunging that I am looking for in my lunging, but we don't pay attention, you know, whether it's the trainer or the student or the instructor. You know, it doesn't matter how educated you are. There's so many pieces that seem to be missing. And it is an art, you know, just like I think riding is an art. Let me back up. When I'm trail riding, for the most part, I just want to be a passenger. But to get your horse to take care of you so that you can be a passenger and not worry, oh my gosh, you know, that's pretty deep in and of itself. But when it comes to riding and executing precise movements and collection and asking our horse to give us those precise movements and collection, we have got to develop them. And it is way more complicated than I see a lot of people teaching it or perceiving it. And so that's what you and I are going to do, is jump in a little deeper. Let me open my door to my patio. I'm in my guest house, my podcast room, and I've got one cat outside on the patio and one in. Let me just let the other one out. Hold on one second. Come on, Bumba. Go get your sissy. It is gorgeous here. We happen to have spring-like weather. It's like in the 70s today, and it's just beautiful to keep you can see how bright it is to keep the doors open. So, okay. So ask away, my dear.
All right.
So the first question.
Okay. First question. The three lunges, can you explain each and the purpose of each?
and probably why. Why do I have three lunges?
Yeah.
Exactly. So as a student of the horse, always a student of the horse, and when I got back into horses and was learning about lunging, I knew nothing about lunging, didn't lunge my horses, and didn't know anything about it. So in my study, and I took that 2-year sabbatical, and I traveled all over the country, and I studied many different disciplines and many masterful people, including books, including the great masters who are no longer here. And in that 2 years, I still didn't have the answers, but I knew that what I was being taught, whether it was a gold medal, dressage medalist, you know, an instructor, whether it was Jack Brainerd, you know, advanced horsemanship, whether it was Pirelli natural horsemanship. And I'll say it was between those three, disciplines, so to speak, dressage, reining, and natural horsemanship, and finding instructors within those three disciplines. I just couldn't get the answers. And to lunging, meaning I would see my Arabian. So I started with the Trinity, Smokey, Legend, and Sundance. And Legend, Sundance were unrideable when I got them as 3 and 4 year olds. And then I had Legend, who was 11, and he was a mental mess. And so when I finally got to the point where I could start trailering him and traveling to go study, which one of them led me all the way down here to Florida for 3 months, Pirelli. But when I was driving around all over from the Eastern Shore of Virginia to Baltimore, studying with these top fourth level FEI, silver, gold, bronze medalists in dressage. And here I was showing up in a bareback pad because I didn't have a saddle, couldn't afford a saddle, that a custom made saddle, in bitless and no helmet. And, you know, they were not going to ride my horse without a saddle. And my question was always the same to all of them, every one of them. And I had 5 different instructors, dressage instructors, I was trying to learn from because I couldn't get the answers. And I'm like, my horse, my Arabian, can do the passage. He can do the pee-off. He can do one tempi lead changes all on his own. He's a make levade. He rears. He can jump 3 feet at a standstill. And he's 14, 3 hands. How do I ride that? And that's where it all began. And so they were horrible answers. They were, well, Caroline, you're going to need to get a saddle, and you're going to need to take lessons, and you're going to need to learn the rising trot and the sitting trot, but mostly the rising trot. And you're going to need to do all these gymnastics. And so none of that sat with me. Like, it didn't resonate well. I'm like, wait a minute. You know, this horse already knows how to move this way. I need to learn how to ask him to move this way. And I need to learn how to ride that movement. And that was the beginning of me being frustrated and paying a lot of money for 2 years, not getting any answers, except you're going to have to learn X, Y, and Z for 2 years. And none of it was lunging, by the way. None of it was lunging. And even Pirelli's lunging was disjointed to me. The natural horsemanship, meaning there was no real connection. Number one, the horses were still being told what to do and given treats. It was all treat training back then. I don't know if Pirelli does it or not. And as I started to train my eye, educate myself to what good movement looked like, and I did most of that through illustrations in the books of the great masters, and whatever footage I could get, because I wasn't seeing it. I wasn't even seeing it with my dressage instructors. And when I would ride their horses, you had to hold them up here. You were so tight. They were so heavy. I thought the movement was tense. The movement had a lot of action. And this is everybody's dressage horse that I rode. The movement had a ton of action, but it was so tight. And I say a ton of action because I could tell the horse was afraid. I could tell that, you know, they wanted me to carry a dressage whip, which I don't have a problem with, but I don't want to carry a whip if it's going to make the horse fear it. You know, to me, the whip is just an extra aid to help the horse with the movement as if it's a leg, you know, or subtle gesture. to get more extension. So anyway, that's when I started studying. And the things that I realized, and this took many years later, was there is no one lunge. Like the things that I had learned, the close lunging work is beautiful. And obviously I teach it in the very beginning of my method, because it's about the connection piece in the relationship, as you know, and the energy embodiment piece. And to me, if you don't have these two elements, which are the glue that binds everything and holds it together, meaning the relationship holds it together, and the relationship that you have with your horse is what creates their desire to connect with you. If you don't have those two things, you might as well go and learn from everybody else, which is how to, you know, develop a robotic horse, right? I mean, all mechanics. Now, mechanics are important. Oh, believe me, they're important. But we're not ready for mechanics until we have the relationship and the horse desiring connection. And then we know they're what? Relaxed and open and willing to learn. And that's what we develop in the close lunge circle. And that's the first lunge that I teach in the spirituality course, the first course. The biggest thing I try to impress upon all of you is that close lunge should never exceed a bigger movement than a trot, you know, because the horse isn't balanced yet. We're looking on, you know, more mental and emotional balance in the close lunge. So it's about the heart, mind, body connection. It's about you learning how to embody energy. And you got to first engage it and develop it before we can fine tune it. And the fine tuning will happen in the second lunge. And I'll talk more about that. And so we want heart, mind, body connection, embodiment of energy. What does it feel like for the walk, the four beat? What does it feel like for a trot, the two beat? And we want to be able to have through that relationship and connection, we want to be able to have a conversation. So we don't want to get disconnected. If we get disconnected, we got to reconnect. So, and then that creates synchronicity. And so the second lunge is my straightness lunge. And there's a lot of straightness lunge out there. I think that is the most universal lunging practice when taught correctly. And I think those of us that teach it, we all have the same goal. We want to create through the straightness lunge, we want to create strength and balance. Strength and balance are two of the most important, the two top two ingredients to collection. But what people don't talk about is it's not just strength and balance that you're developing through straightness. You're also developing focus, discipline, self-regulation, rhythm. Can't have rhythm without relaxation and regulation. And I talk about that in the program. But strength and balance, you also need stretching. So what I call Pilates for horses, that is my straightness lunge, Pilates for horses. And so if any of you have taken Pilates, we know that Pilates is the whole purpose of it is through your stretching, you are lengthening, like you're lengthening. A stretch is lengthening, stretching and lengthening your muscles and tendons. And through the in-breath work, so when you breathe, you produce oxygen. And oxygen throughout the body is what creates relaxation in our muscles. That's the science of it. So you can't do one without the other. You can stretch all you want, but that's why in yoga and Pilates, they combine the breath work. So you're breathing and stretching. So when you stretch, you're lengthening and strengthening. And in that process, as we're adding movement now, see, we're not sitting still. That's what humans do in Pilates pretty much. We're not still. When we're with the horse, we're in movement. So the Pilates for the horse in the straightness training is how can we ask them at a walk to be focused and disciplined, to stay at a walk, stay on the circle, stay in the direction, stay in the speed you're asking, and then start relaxing in that speed, which is going to be the walk. That's where we're going to start. And as they relax, you're pushing the lengthening the stride, you're pushing the movement forward even more to stretch the stride, lengthen the stride. In the process of stretching and lengthening, lengthening and stretching, you're creating more strength and balance. And the horse has to use their hind end. So this is where the whole hind end engagement and activation, impulsion begins. And so that's about the horse. Now, what about you? So this is, again, where it's much different than everybody else, because we're not just standing there in the middle of our lunge and chasing the horse around with the whip or moving the whip to chase the horse. We're with the movement. We are active. We are in a specific position with our aids, including our body and our lunge whip and our lead line, or if we can go free, we are in a specific position that creates the energy, the vortex for the energy, the channel for the energy to go forward. And in, while we are creating this channel of energy to go forward, we're also teaching the horse to follow our focus. We're teaching them to follow their focus. We're teaching us how to get in rhythm with the horse's tempo, their beat, their footfall, and embody that tempo. And so there's this great alignment and synchronicity that is being developed between horse and human that takes the level of connection even deeper, because now we've started with relationship and friendship and love and bonding and desiring to be connected. Now we're taking it to a deeper, energetic, quiet, nonverbal level of connection, because all of this is going to prepare you to ride as one. So you become one, you learn to move one, you become one in the beginning with the close work. In the first course, in the second course of my program, you learn how to move as one. And then throughout that, you learn how to ride as one. And so the shoulder in is the third style of my lunging. And it's just as important, but only if you want advancement, if you want performance like I do. So you're taking the close work, the ability to have a conversation, connect, have a relationship, and that's going to help you problem solve big time. Now you're taking it into the mechanics of the second style, which is a straightness, which is about focus, discipline, self-regulation, rhythm, relaxation, embodiment, stretching, strength, balance, elasticity, cadence, self-carriage, and collection. Wow. And you're learning how to develop your horse's movement before you ride the movement. Isn't that to me, the most fair and honorable way, fairest way to honor, the best way to honor our horses? Why get on? No one should ever ride their horse and think you're going to develop movement that way. You can refine it, but it needs to start without the rider, without the saddle, minimal aids, naturally, organically, progressively, according to the horse and how they tell you what they're ready for next. But the person has to be trained. Training your eye. And I know there's questions that'll allow us to dive into that. But so the third lunge is the shoulder in, and that's very advanced. When you are learning the shoulder in as a rider in dressage, it's usually second, third level dressage that you're learning it, depending on what you're riding, the movement that you're riding. But we're gonna, if we want to refine the movement even more, meaning I want to be able to execute canter departs from a walk on my horse, collected canter departs from a walk. I want to ride that. If I want to execute that, I'm going to teach my horse how to do that on the ground first. And I'm going to be part of that process, meaning I have to embody it. My body has to be the container of energy, because when I sit on the horse, my seat's going to connect and I want that horse to feel that energy and respond appropriately. But it's teaching the rider how horses move. So you're not just going to ask for a canter by scaring the horse into a canter. You're going to collect the canter within your body, because that's what it feels like when you ride a collected canter, when a horse picks you up and pushes you from the hind end into a canter. When you know what that feels like, and a lot of people have never ridden that. Most of us that have taken lessons on our school horses never get to ride that level of collection unless you're talented. Most FEI instructors, most upper level instructors, whether it's reining, dressage, or hunter jumper, they're not going to waste their time with a novice rider. They're not. Why would they when they're teaching at this level, right? And they can command top dollar for this level. So my whole thought process is that's awful. I get it, but it's awful. Everybody needs to learn and develop this foundation within themselves and their horse, right? And you can take it as far as you want, but why not at least develop this foundation for all the right reasons? And so the stroller in takes, you have to, you know, do these lunging styles in the progressive order that they're given. So you can't get to the third style until you know what elasticity is. And you're starting to see your horse in self-carriage and in collected movement while they're transitioning in the walk and into the trot and back down and into the canter, and they're lifting up into the canter, not pulling and themselves into it. So the shoulder in develops advanced movement, such as renvers, which is shoulder in when you ride it. It's also more collected movement like canter departs, simple lead changes, flying lead changes. So when I'm developing simple lead changes and flying lead changes in horses, I develop it through these lunging styles and change of direction. So it's pretty complicated, pretty sophisticated. And why not? Horses are pretty complicated, and learning how the whole biomechanics and learning how to ride that movement, we need to develop the movement so that they're professional athletes and they can handle us on them and handle the extensive amounts of time we're asking them to carry us. But we need to learn how to ride the movement. And I think it's so much safer. It is. I know it is. And more fair to the person and the horse if we learn it on the ground. You know, get that tremendous, you know, synchronicity between the two of you, which leads to permission to getting on, as I teach in the program. And so much confidence and safety and trust. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Is there anything you want to ask? Anything more, or you're good?
I think that's good for this question.
It's a deep one. That's the most complicated one. Okay, question number two.
Okay. Can you explain footfall?
Oh, yeah. So this is great because, Sarah, you came up with all of these questions on your own. And some of these are some of the most complicated questions. It's kind of like the half halt, because a million different instructors have explanations for the half halt. And footfall is usually never discussed until you are at an advanced level in riding. And you have to like pre-qualify for an instructor to even give you the time of day. As I just said, they're not going to waste their time when they can get top dollar. I mean, I was paying $275 15 years ago, $275 for 45 minutes from I don't know if it was a silver medalist or bronze, for 45 minutes. Plus I had to drive there. That was 4 hours to get there, stay the night and come back. So can you explain footfall? So here it is, very simply. I think I'm going to nail it for all of you. Footfall is the beat or rhythm of a drum. So when you listen to someone drumming, usually we get in rhythm with that, don't we? Like we start banging our heads and our hands, and it's easy. It's easy. So that means we are embodying that rhythm, that tempo of the drum beat. So just wait. I know that's not footfall, but just wait. This is how I teach it. So if I think every human has experienced, haven't you? When you listen to a song that you like and loudly, do you catch yourself embodying the tempo or the beat of that song?
Yeah.
Okay. So knowing footfall is a visual, auditory, and somatic experience. Somatic means what we feel in our body. It's all three. And to get really good at footfall, you need to experience all three. Sometimes it can happen all at once, and sometimes it's one piece at a time. So it's what you're watching, what you hear, boom, 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 bump, 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 bump. So what is that? That's a four beat, right? So what is bump, 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 bump? What would that be in a horse's gait? Which gait would that be? The four beat.
You mean like slow, medium, fast gait?
Nope, that would be that's transitions. So slow, medium, fast are called transitions or RPMs. A gait is which gait is the horse in? Walk, trot, or canter?
Walk.
Yeah, right? You're good. So the four beat is a walk. And so we're starting at the walk and we are refining the walk, because we want to get three transitions within each gait. We want to get a slow, relaxed walk. We want to get a medium walk. And we want to get a fast but relaxed walk. So you need to watch it, listen, and what does it feel like when you are sitting in that? Even when you're listening, you can embody it, right? Because what you hear, like music, your body will start to get what? Embodied with that tempo or that beat. Does that make sense? So that's footfall. So knowing footfall visually, auditorily, and somatically is the secret to learning how to ride the movement and be one with the horse's movement. So if you're lunging and you get to the stage, the phase where you can watch your horse while you're lunging, because there are phases of the lunge, then you are looking at their footfall. You're looking at the four beat. And as you're looking at it, you start counting it. And as you count it, you start embodying it. It's just a natural process. So that's one way. If you're riding the walk, you don't look for the footfall. Don't look for the shoulder. You certainly can't look for the hind end. But a lot of people, when they're learning lead changes and the correct lead at the canter, they're taught. It's crazy how you're taught. It's usually wrong. Look, look, look. Don't look. You got to feel it. So that's why I'm going back to the very beginning, and we start out really slow. Embody the walk, embody the trot, embody the transitions or the speeds, the RPMs of each of these gaits. And then before you know it, the canter, your horse will be prepared to do a healthy, correct canter depart, not this speed up trot, sloppy rush into a canter. And you're like, whoa, 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 what was that? You can't ride it. And if you're lunging it, it's awful. So we want to learn it correctly. So we need to start out slow, teach our horse, how to refine that movement through strength and balance building so that they are collected in their movement. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So footfall to me is no different than following the beat of something, what you see, what you hear, and what you feel. Does that help?
Yeah, that helps.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Okay. Third question.
Okay. Can you talk about the gait embodiment within us and the process?
Okay. So what do you mean by, for our viewers and listeners, what do you mean by the gait embodiment? Because that's my language. I love it. And you're my student. So that's appropriate. What do you mean by gait embodiment within us and the process?
Like the walk, trot, canter, when you start listening to it, like in footfall, and then you start, it comes alive within you up and down your spine. So like your chakras, you're up in your third chakra and you're embodying that movement in your body.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. I love it. So can you talk about the gait embodiment within and the process? So embodying, as we just said, with footfall, embody means to embody the feel. It's a somatic experience. So we're going to start at the walk again. Everything should begin at the walk, and then we build. So if you want to embody the walk, because you want to ask your horse what type of speed transition of the walk you want without using kicking and clucking and whips and whatnot. If you want it to be natural and you want it to be consensual. You know, the horse, you want the horse to join you in that, right? You want them to be there in that with you, not make them. And that is totally possible because that's what I have with my horses and that's what I teach. And you're getting, you all are getting that, students of mine. Then you need to keep embodying it. You need to keep the horse connected in you embodying it, so that when you bring up the energy into the four beat, 1, 2, 3, 4, your horse is coming up into that energy, or if you slow that energy down. And so the process, as you just started to explain, I teach it, it's an energy engagement. If we don't engage the energy within our bodies, then we have no choice but to use aids. And I want our biggest, loudest, yet most subtle aid to be our body, right? I want it to be our intention as an energy, what we think. I want our horse tuned into that. And I want us to be congruent. So what we're thinking and feeling is what we're doing, what we're embodying. So embodying the gait is a somatic, visceral experience. This means you feel the movement, the footfall, the beat and the tempo on a sensory, what you see, hear, feel on a sensory level and a cellular level. That's at energetic level. They're all the same and absolutely important to learning how to ride the horse's movement. Again, without minimally, naturally, be one in mind, body, and relationship. So, you know, unfortunately, most people are only taught to be passengers when they ride, honestly, in their lessons. And this is what I mean by that, because I get all the students. So they get, you're taught to just get on the horse, hang on, kick, squeeze, yank, pull to go, turn and stop. And it's awful for the horse and it teaches the rider nothing. So I'd say that 98% of the thousands of students I've worked with ride this way. And that's why they come to me. They want to learn how to ride a different way because it doesn't feel right. And they're scared. And you know, the horse is, you know, the instructor is telling them to ride a certain way, but the horse is tense. The horse is scared. So it's not the horse's fault. It's the trainer and it's the instructor's and the rider's fault, but in that order, because the trainer, whoever trains these horses, does not train them correctly, right? And then you pass them on to the instructor who doesn't know what the trainer did. So now they're putting you, the rider, on the horse and they're teaching you a barbaric, it's a basic, you know, barbaric way of riding, if you ask me. And it really dumbs down the sensitivity and intelligence of the horse. It just, I mean, most horses are, all horses are passive by nature. They want to please and they want to get along. That's just intrinsic and instinctive. Once in a while, you'll get a really dominant personality who says, hell no, and they're a fighter. But a lot of times, most of these horses are passive and they learned helplessness. They just learn how to submit. They don't see any other way out. They might have struggled here and there and met a more powerful, overbearing, dominant human who forced them into submission. And they do. They just submit and give. But eventually, a lot of these horses, these lesson horses, start showing their stress. And again, I know this for a fact because these are my students. They find me because they're looking for a different way, or they're coming back to horses and they're older and wiser. And it's so sad because the horse is scared and the rider becomes scared and all this tension is in the body. There's no relaxation. You know, nobody's being taught how to embody movement or even connect with the horse in a way that means something to the horse, that's important to the horse. So, you know, here we are learning a loving, if you ask me, a loving and natural and considerate way to ask the horse to join us, you know, whether it's on the ground or riding. And to join us means we're going to join you. I want you to join me, but I'm also going to join you in this. I'm not going to be a passenger full of tension, you know, and kicking you to, and making you go into a movement that doesn't feel right for you, the horse, within yourself, or because the rider doesn't feel right. So yeah, it's just, So the gait embodiment is, it's all about the energy, and you learn all of that on the ground. You got to learn it. And that's what the lunging will teach the human and the horse. And you're going to connect in that energy. Does that make sense?
Yep.
All right. So let me give one example for that. So an example of embodying the walk, and you and I kind of did this already, would be listening to the footfall, what you hear on the ground as the horse's hooves hit the ground, listening to the footfall, and then counting it. Because when you start to count it, and even out loud, 1, 2, 3, 4, you'll start to embody that beat. It's natural. And if you do this enough, even if you don't have a horse, this is stuff you can do on your own. Kind of like you and I talking prior to this podcast about, you know, setting up scenarios where you can create the mental memory, which creates a muscle memory, depending on what you're teaching. And you don't have to be with your horse to do this. You can be sitting there right now in your room by yourself and go, okay, I'm going to watch a video of a horse walking, trotting, and cantering, and I'm going to play it over and over again. And I'm going to count the footfall until I start to embody it and feel it in my body. And then I'm going to take that beat, that tempo. You can take it anywhere. Believe me, it's real, because when you can embody that energy, the horse is going to connect to it immediately because it's natural to them. They're full of a lot of strong energy and frequency. And science has been able to prove that through heart math. And so that's the biggest difference of me coming into the arena, working with a horse for the first time. I could work with Shiloh, your horse, and make change immediately just because of the presence, the energetic presence that I bring in to that space is so clear and so strong, so well developed, so clear and so strong that it's easy for her to connect to that. So that's something anyone can practice on their own.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Number 4.
All right.
What is
what is happening throughout the horse's body in the correct application of both the shoulder in and the straight lunge?
Okay. So I'm going to begin with the straight lunge because it comes before the shoulder in. So for the straight lunge to work correctly, it must be done correctly. And there are many pieces to the straight lunge. As I mentioned in the very beginning, all the qualities of the straight lunge. And I mentioned most of them. So it must be done correctly. And this takes time for both horse and human to develop. All right. And we start slow and progressive steps. I mean, if there are a lot of horses that have trauma with lunging and they go nuts. But if your horse can start out at a walk, that's where we want to start. And if your horse is too stressed out and can't walk because they've had trauma and they've been made to run, then my program teaches you a ton of strategies to help them self-regulate so that you can finally get them to walk. But it's important that we start with the walk always. And like I mentioned, Pilates. It's Pilates. We are looking to lengthen the stride of the walk so we can strengthen and create balance. And we have to have those three things before we can be collected in any movement. And the movement must be through the horse's body from the front, from the hind end forward. And so we're always working from the hind end. And that's through the top line. And as we get energy through the horse, the top line will relax. And then we get the longitudinal stretch and we start to get even more stretching. So it's not just the stride that is stretching. It's the whole body that now is lengthening and stretching and building up strength and balance. So that's what's happening throughout the horse's body for the correct application. And so much of this, again, the human has to be educated. Like you know, every one of my students that joins my big program, I won't say every one of them, I will say 98% rush into the program and they want to get to X, Y, and Z. And the program is painfully slow because I'm rewiring you guys to slow down so you can be present in the moment, attuned, tuned in, train your eye. You have to go slow enough to be able to connect and create a conversation with your horse too. So, you know, I can talk all I want till I'm blue in the face about what it should look like in the horse, but if you don't know what it should look like, it's not going to happen. And so the program, you know, has a lot of lessons, video lessons on training your eye, doesn't it? I have a whole section on the art of lunging that takes all the steps that you're learning in the curriculum and takes it into makes a whole separate course and says, okay, this is what you've been, and there's probably 20 videos in that art of lunging because this is the big picture. This is what you're painfully learning. But let's review it again and really slow it down and train that eye, or you're just going to rush the movement and rush the horse mentally. And you lose relaxation in the mind, you lose relaxation in the movement. Then it's hard. Then you're back to forcing and controlling your horse with all your aids when you ride, instead of creating that self-carriage where the horse carries themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right. So the shoulder in, like I said, is really advanced, and it's the third and final lunging style. But it shouldn't, you know, some people don't even have to. I don't spend a lot of time. I teach you the in-hand renvers and travers. I teach you the in-hand work, and I teach you it on a basic level in the riding. But I only have one, maybe two videos on the third advanced lunging style, because I don't want anybody, you know, you're only going to see what you're ready to see. And I don't want anybody crippling their horse or asking for too much and not understanding how slow this process goes. And the most important aspect of this third lunging style, the shoulder in, is it's a test. You've already done the number one lunge, the closed circle for connection and conversation and energy embodiment, the beginning of energy embodiment. Now you're taking it into the straightness lunge, number two. And now if you've done one and two correctly, especially number two, you've created the level of elasticity in the movement that'll allow you to advance to level three, the third lunge. And so the third lunge is just a test. Can I have my horse go around me in the shoulder in, arced into me at a walk, then straight into the trot, play with the transitions of the trot, which help to create that elasticity, just like you would when you're riding, because this is how you'll do it under saddle. Now, can I ask if I've created enough elasticity, which means fluidity between transitions, horse is really powered up in the hind end, lifting the shoulder in, right? They have to lift the shoulder, get off the front end, power up the hind end. Now, can I ask for a canter? Can they give me a beautiful lifted canter depart? Or do they stress out, speed up, rush into a bigger trot and fall forward into the canter? So the third lunge is a test. And once your horse can do a canter depart in the third lunge, then you'll refine it there. And that's where you can keep building into upper level movements, like one tempi, lead changes, simple changes, flying changes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The program was designed for many things, one of which is it was designed for beginner riders, beginner horse people, even if you're older. And it was designed also at the same time to develop a foundation, a riding foundation. It was designed to rehabilitate, restart horses, as well as take it into high performance. But you can't even, until you've gone through the program, the whole curriculum, and you're ready to see all the layers, then you'll backtrack and go, wow, I can see how it's designed to refine. And again, the third level lunging is very complex. But when you've done everything correctly, when you've done everything correctly, it'll be easy, if that makes sense. Okay. So you ready for what, number five? What's that? Talk about the top line?
Yeah. Can you talk about top line? What is it? How do you strengthen it?
Okay. So the top line of the horse is the area that runs from the withers. Well, I say it runs from the pole. So if you look it up online, it starts at the withers. No, it starts at the pole. And I'll explain why. So it starts at the pole, travels down the neck, the withers, the spine, along the horse's loin, the back, and down the croup. And so the croup is the top part of the buttocks, you know, the croup. All right. The muscling in the top line is absolutely important. And I'd say I can look at any professional trainer, instructor online and tell right away that their horse is not properly developed just by looking at physically, by looking at their top line. And so the muscling in the top line is important. Not only does it support the spine and joints, it's also an indicator of healthy muscling and healthy, proper movement. And so I say it starts at the pole, because when you're developing the top line in my lunging, especially my straightness lunging, we're talking about the longitudinal stretch. We're talking about the horse stretching. And you have to create this longitudinal stretch, which creates elasticity, helps to create elasticity and throughness, movement that's through the body. And that'll be movement that's through the top line from the tail end of the spine to the neck, to the pole, up through the neck and the pole. And when you need this longitudinal stretch to happen, and that a level of elasticity in the transitions, gymnastics, basically through the straightness lunge, you need that, and it needs to be done correctly. And when it's done correctly, when the horse is, what you'll see is that at the pole on the side of the neck, the muscle is the thinnest, but as it goes down the neck towards the wither, it will get the thickest and widest. And then behind the wither on the loin, the back, you know, you have the spine. On each side of the spine, there's a thin tendon. And then on each side of that tendon, there is muscle. And that's why it's so important when you fit a saddle that you make sure the tree is not sitting on the spine or the tendons, that it is, the weight is being distributed wide enough to reach that horse's muscle. And the problem is so many horses are underdeveloped. They don't have any muscling. They have a bony back. They don't have a flat back that either dips down and then bulges out with muscle. So that's a whole nother conversation, isn't it? But you want to see that the back is flat, if not concave, because the muscle is higher than the spine. And you're going to see those two lines of muscle along the spine all the way to the croup. And then the croup is basically where the SI joint is, you know, past the lumbar, where the SI joint, where the butt starts to go up, right? You want to see almost a line dividing the croup or the buttocks. And I've achieved that in every breed, from gated, which usually have a little bit of a hunter bumper point, to Arab, hunter bumper point, to thoroughbred. Hell no. You can create I call it what in quarter horse enthusiast world, we call it the apple butt in quarter horses, where they get so muscled and they're built this way that that you can create this apple. Everything's filled out. So you want the croup to be as filled out with even just a sliver of a dividing line. And you want the flanks to be filled out. You don't want hollow. How many horses do we see with concave flanks, hollowed out flanks instead of, or convex instead of concave? And so it's important that the neck muscle be developed. And it's not going to be developed if the horse is tight in the wither and hollowed out. It'll only be developed if they're able to extend that neck and stretch it and lengthen it. And while they do that with the nose almost on the ground and the lunging, and then when you go to ride, that's part of your warm-up. It's beautiful. When they do that, it changes all the movement. It is the most, that's what creates cadence in the tempo. That's what creates the action, the elasticity in the upward movement, not just the forward movement, the upper movement. I know I'm getting complicated. I'm trying not to be complicated. So strengthening it, basically, we start at the free lunge or online lunge, no saddle, no tack, minimal aids, soft rope halter, 12-foot soft marine quality lead line. We've got our long, lunge whip to help guide the body. It's not to make the horse go, but it's to guide the body. And the whip is very important because we're going to use it at the neck, at the shoulder, at the rib cage, whatever body part falls in. We are going to be using rhythmic pressure to straighten that horse back out until that horse gets strong enough in the hind end to carry themselves straight. And that's how you create straightness on a circle. Have you ever heard canter your horse straight on a circle? Have you ever seen a horse canter straight on a circle, whether it's in a small circle, a free lunge, a line lunge or under saddle? Have you, besides my work, have you ever seen? A lot of people, you don't see a lot of that. And the biggest problem with Pirelli, and I was reminded of this back in 2019 when I went to Rome to teach for a week. And one of the auditors was a certified level three Pirelli instructor in Rome, in Italy. I don't know, maybe it was another country, but he came to audit and he was showing me video. He was a sweet guy, but showing me video. See, we are like, this is all about connection and developing. He didn't even say developing movement, but connection and collection. And yes, his horse was on him, but it was nothing like what I teach, meaning he was cantering himself on the ground. The person was doing the canter on the ground like the horse, and the horse was cantering next to him, but he was falling in and he was playing with him. He wasn't focused. He wasn't straight on the circle, and it was all play. And I'm not teaching you to canter on the ground. I'm teaching you how to embody the canter through your butt and up your spine, just like it feels when you ride it, so that you can eventually ride that movement. Teaching you how to learn the movement first on the ground. And so I said to him, and I'm like, that's beautiful. I see the joy, what a great relationship you have. Your horse is having so much fun. That was so true. I said, but you're not straight. Therefore you don't have true collection. So this is really important, and developing an upper level dressage, it's either level three or four training scale. I might even be level four. I mean, the goal is to be able to get your horse to canter bent in the direction of movement. So when you start training, and this is for all horses, because asymmetry exists in all of us, we're looking for symmetry. We're looking for balance. Symmetry is balance. So everyone and every horse is asymmetrical. We have weaker and stronger sides. And so you've got to assess where your horse is. Are they asymmetrical? Most likely. And so are they dropping a shoulder? Are they falling in? Are they crooked? What's going on? And so I absolutely prefer to develop this on the ground and as freely as possible, get out of the horse's way, do it as natural, meaning let them show you where they are and you use the softest of aids to help develop them so that when you go to ride, they're strong and balanced and can carry themselves. And then any improvement, correction, refinement is so subtle. And you're just realigning your horse. So where I'm going with dressage is when you're riding and you're teaching a horse straightness on a circle, believe me, that doesn't happen right away. What happens is a horse is usually gonna, if you're cantering to the right, most horses are asymmetrical like people. And so either you're creating this as a rider or you're both creating it, but the horse is going to bulge into the circle. They're going to bulge or fall into the circle. They're crooked. So that means they're usually bent in the opposite direction of movement. They're bent left or bulging right while traveling right because they're unbalanced. As you work through and develop them, they'll get straight. But the optimum movement to ride is getting your horse bent in the direction of movement. And in order for them to be bent, that means they're truly traveling straight from the hind end to the shoulder. And the shoulder is doing a shoulder in. And that means from the shoulder in to the nose, there is a slight bend, a very slight bend. And the horse is able to keep themselves in self-carriage. You're not making it happen. You're not forcing it to happen. Now, that's why I do all of these lunging methods so that this can get created so that we aren't hurting the horse. You know, we aren't making them unsound in time because we force them into this frame, which is what most people are taught. Because they don't want to take the time. So I think that the top line, I talked about that and how to strengthen it. So you want me to, the next question, I think this is number six, about you want me to give stories?
Yeah.
Why don't you read the question?
Okay, sorry. Can you give stories of traumatized horses and how through the lunging they have reached self-regulation?
Yes, you know I can. So I think the first really important thing to say is that through my lunging, horses will develop emotional agility, which is the same as self-regulation. So the simplest explanation I can give is the science of it all. Anytime you create rhythm in the movement, rhythmic movement in your body, anytime you create that or the horse's body, you naturally produce, release endorphins, the feel-good hormone and calming chemicals. That's the science. I've written articles about this 15 years ago, before it became popular to talk about, you know, the vagus, polyvagal, vagus nerve, and all this self-regulation. As you know, in the program, my word is emotional agility. And so I've been using that. It's the same as self-regulation. A person or a horse that's emotionally agile is self-regulated. So they don't go into endorphin. They don't go into the sympathetic nervous system. They stay in the parasympathetic nervous system, which is rest and digest. And that means you're calm, you're relaxed, you're thinking, you're responding, you're not reacting, you're not in self-preservation. So the lunging basically, you create rhythm, and rhythm can be hard, right? Our horses can get stressed out and speed up and change direction and escalate and shut down. But when you can produce rhythm in the movement, the horse and you will naturally release the chemical or hormone. It's the same, called endorphin. And it's that endorphin release that goes through the entire nervous system and into the brain. And that is what is calming. And that is what creates self-regulation. That simple. And so your next question spins off of that. These are so well thought out. You want me to talk about emotional regulation and what does it look like? What is the process to help the horse reach it? So my question to you was, do you mean emotional agility? And because that's what's in the program. In either case, they are the same as self-regulation. So we just talked about it. You know, emotional regulation is self-regulation, is emotional agility. What does it look like? It looks like a horse is calm, relaxed, thinking, responding, not reacting by overreacting or shutting down. And what is the process to help them reach it? The lunging. So that's my number one go-to in everything, whether I'm developing the horse's movement, which I'm always doing, or rehabilitating horses. Every horse from a young horse, a newbie, you know, that's a novice and green, to restarting horses, to, you know, traumatized rehabilitation, to performance, they're all going to learn these lunging styles, even a little bit of the shoulder in. And I show some of that in my retraining the traumatized riding horse short course in my Everything Horses and More video library. I have a few short courses, and I've shown a couple of the videos on my YouTube channel to get people interested, but I have a lengthy course on Mateo, the five-year-old Frisian that came to me to restart, and he was very traumatized. So yeah, that really gets into, takes the program, you know, and there you go. Okay, your next question.
Okay. In the very beginning of a horse's retraining training, how do you start the lunging?
Okay, let me read that. So in the very beginning of a horse's retraining or training process, how do I start the lunging? And my quick answer is I don't start lunging. I let the horse tell me how they need to be lunged. Most people don't even begin there. They just push the horse into whatever program they have, whatever exercises they want the horse to do, and make it happen. And I have a program. I have a whole curriculum. But I'm teaching you, the horse partner, owner, rider, handler, what's the best approach for your horse to learn the program, to learn everything that's important in this program. And I never just start. Like, I would never take a horse when I assess them or work with them for the first time and just start lunging them. I don't start there. So, but when I do get to the point where I want to introduce the round pen or lunging online or lunging freely, they go in, and how they respond to that environment and that moving forward tells me what I need to do with them. Meaning I don't just make them go into lunging. You know that, like I'm listening to the horse, and that is so important. Listening and information gathering information about how they feel and what's broken, you know, what needs to get fixed. To make them confident, because this lunging is such a big deal and it's so important for them emotionally, mentally, and physically to be balanced and regulated, that you can't make it happen if they're stressed. So if they're stressed, then there's all these strategies that we need to work on to get them relaxed and trusting. And then from there, we'll develop them in the lunge. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay, like, good. When you, like on your YouTube videos, when you film your first session with a horse, like with Billy or Bandit, the first thing you'll ask for is engagement. And then you will, like, once you get engagement, I don't know, you know, you can go from there.
Connection. Well, and I'm looking to see if we can offer it. You're right. Billy was an ex racehorse. He didn't know a thing about the round pen. And Bandit had been messed up by a couple of previous trainers. So he was petrified in the round pen. So I put him in that space to see how they respond or react. And that tells me, it's enough information to tell me, huh, you don't know anything about this. So you're actually going to be easy to train because you don't have any trauma. That would be Billy. You know, Billy, he did get a little excited once I got him moving. And then I asked him to connect and join me, but it happened quickly for Billy because he didn't have any negative experiences. Bandit was it took months to get Bandit. Yeah. To get Bandit to start to unravel all that damage that had been done. But yeah, it's always about connection. It's like, I don't want you to go on autopilot. I don't want you to assume the horse. I don't want them to assume and become a robot. I want them to trust me and to stay connected so that we can have a conversation, because they're not going to be able to feel me, you know, and then we're going to hit the same thresholds and the same issues that everybody else hit. You know, Bandit, you know, put his owner in the ER, you know, as soon as she got on, he exploded. And so, yeah, it is really important to see how they feel about what you are asking them to participate in. And that is in everything. Everything is an opportunity to get information. And that's how I set you guys up in the program, is to think, you know, to be an observer and a listener. Great questions. Okay. So next question.
Okay. Can you talk about being on the hind end, backing, riding, lunging?
Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit about it. Yeah. A little bit about it in the lunging, how important it is. So this is where, you know, we dive in even deeper in the program, because like I said, we're just touching the surface in this podcast. You know, I dive down even more that everything I'm teaching you has purpose. Everything I'm teaching you has purpose. When you ask your horse to back away from you and then stand still, how they back is so important. And we want to get the end result is we want the horse backing with a relaxed top line and using their hind end so they sit back on their hind end. So that when we send them out into a lunging circle, they are sitting back and lifting their shoulder as they move out. So everything is a building block. Everything is a step-by-step process to get these horses to become mental and muscle memory for them. Because the end goal, the big picture here, is that you can take months to years off of riding. But once you have this foundation that I've created, the horse never forgets how to move correctly. And that means I haven't schooled my horses in years. And look at Sundance, who is retired and arthritic. But if I ask her to participate in a Liberty session on the lunge, walk, trot, and canter, she remembers exactly how to relax into it, stretch, and collect. She may be out of shape. That's obvious because we haven't been practicing it. But she doesn't forget it mentally or, you know, somatically. And so that's what a foundation does, is you never forget it. It becomes ingrained. It becomes second nature. And then our horses are always moving with this level of relaxation, mental and physical, and moving correctly. So just by walking and trotting and playing throughout the day and the weeks, they're exercising and stretching and doing their own light Pilates. So it maintains itself. That's the cool thing. So being on the hind end is about the horse carrying themselves in true collection and in self-carriage. It's not about you forcing it, you know, especially when we ride, creating that frame. It's you teaching the horse how to naturally create the self-carriage, which creates the frame. So, you know, I think, you know, visually your eye is trained to what a tight, you know, bracing, brasive, hollowed out horse looks like, right? You know, their head's high. Oops, excuse me. Their neck is hollow like me. Their back is hollow versus being round and having a bascule, you know, a roundness. So if you just watch horses and how they move, you know, most of them move really tight and stressed because they don't know how to stretch and relax. And it hasn't been ingrained in them. That foundation isn't there. So we want to do this enough that it gets ingrained. And then you can drop it like a bad habit and pick it up a year or two later. You'll never forget. It's like riding a bike. And you'll never forget too, because both you and the horse are still moving this way throughout your day, even when you're not riding or working together. You've trained your body too. So it's really cool. It works for both of you.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. What does it take to get the canter on a small circle? Well, first you have to be straight. That's the most important thing. And that's why you know, can't emphasize enough in the big program, do not start the close number one circle, the number one lunge, the close circle. Do not, if, well, my horse is cantering around me. And then I'm like, don't, you know, because the horse is imbalanced. And that's when, you know, your eye isn't trained to know the difference. So the horse is probably stressing and leaning and dropping a shoulder and throwing themselves in. And it's just, it's not safe. And they can wipe out, they can wipe out on you. So everything's done really slow, progressively in stages, and we're constantly testing it and refining it until the horse can pick up true collection and self-carriage, and they're straight on the circle. So, you know, it's training your eye to what that looks like so that you can train the horse so that you can see when the horse isn't straight. It takes a lot. And some horses, you know, are naturally built for this better. The Iberian horses are. Iberian horses are your Lusitanos, your Andalusians, your Arabians. You know, those three are built more uphill, different shoulder angle. They sit back on their haunches a little bit more, but they still need strength building. They need strength. My working equitation instructor down here in Florida, when I got certified many years ago, and she's retired, or I'd still be taking lessons, but she's retired. She retired shortly after I graduated in 2012. She's amazing. And part of my camp was to work with her young Andalusians. She had a breeding farm while she was. She was the only, I'm so proud of this. Listen to this story. She was the only FEI fourth level dressage trainer instructor that graduated on a 14-2 hand Appaloosa. She's the only one. She said, when I got there, I'm with all of these 16, 17 plus hand warm bloods, you know, six figure horses. Looking to get my certification as a dressage instructor and trainer, fourth level, the highest you can get, FEI. And she showed me all her magazine covers of her being, you know, interviewed. And she's like 5'2". Isn't that beautiful? So I'm honored. And then she got into working equitation. And so I worked with her young Andalusians, and they are bred. You know, this is what you get for blood in bloodlines. You breed for specific traits. And the Andalusian is known to be built uphill and in true self-carriage naturally. But they don't have strength. So, you know, they still don't have strength, even though they might be balanced. But the coolest thing is within 2 weeks, I had this 3-year-old doing the pee-off under saddle. So, you know, it's just beautiful. It's so cool. Wish I had filmed all that. I know I never think of pulling out. It interrupts the moment. You know, I still don't do a good job with pulling out my phone and videotaping stuff, because it just takes away from the moment in time. Your next question, what's the importance of the order of the lunges? I think I addressed that. We have a specific order, 1, 2, and 3, and close circle, but only at the walk and trot, if the trot, then the straightness lunge, walk, trot, canter, and then the number 3 is a shoulder in. So in halt, and then the next question, how does it lead to riding? Yay! And I answer, well, that's a loaded question. In my method, you don't ride until you can develop the movement you want to ride and you get permission to get on. So my 3 lunging styles are designed to create both. So that was pretty simple. And I know, can you talk about play with a horse? So you've had some amazing play with your horse.
Yeah.
So what do you want me to talk about?
Just like you give the horse time to develop themselves so they can handle the play, like the, you know, they go
the energy.
Yeah, they go up in adrenaline and they need to be able to come back down and be able to handle that so that they can play with you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big question because there's a lot of Liberty trainers out there. And I love Liberty. You know, that's one of the things I've always had with my horses before I ever learned what Liberty was, is I always had this really awesome relationship and bond. They always wanted to be with me, follow me. And I took it as a young kid before I was even a teenager or the beginning of my teenage years, 12 and 13, when I had my backyard horse, Brandy. That was my first experience with Liberty, play, riding, bareback in, bridleless, nothing. And, you know, I explored all of that. And that was my first experiences with my own horse. No one taught me any of that. And that's what I bring into my method, is those experiences and the joy of those experiences, the joy of figuring it out. And they're what I don't ever remember losing my horse, like I've done as an adult, putting so much pressure, you know, on myself and my horse. I never lost Brandy. And I think, you know, a couple of reasons why. I think one, he was my backyard horse. I was his only, you know, the whole family loved him, but I was his buddy, right? I was his horse, his companion. I was with him every day. And I was a kid. I didn't put that pressure on myself. I didn't have that pressure. You know, I didn't put it on myself. It was fun. And I think maybe the third thing was being a romantic at heart. You know, I talk about this often. I'm at that age where the Black Stallion, you know, series, the book series was out when I was that age. And then the movie came out years later. And so I was caught up in that fantasy of having what Alec Ramsey had with the Black. And I'm like, I didn't think I couldn't have it, right? I'm like, I didn't think I could, couldn't. So I just kept playing with it. And maybe I'm smart, you know, maybe that has something to do with it. Or I'm really good at analyzing kind of common sense, like organizing. You know, Brandy would always lay down. And so I would go out and lay down with them. And this is an example of what I'm talking about. And then I'm like, well, Alec Ramsey had all these cues for the Black, whether it was a whistle, he had this language with the Black, not necessarily nonverbal. And I'm like, okay, so if I go and lay down on Brandy or next to Brandy, now I want to teach him to lay down when I sit down. So I just started breaking it down into a process. Like, okay, now I'm going to put his head on my lap. He loved that in the sun while I kissed him and caressed him until my legs fell asleep. So can I create a cue? And my first cue was just every time he laid down, I laid down. And then it was organic, meaning every time I went to sit down, he would lay down with me. That was the first thing. And that just happened naturally. It just happened. I didn't plan it. I didn't know anything about it. We just did it all the time. And then I just paid attention to it. I'm like, wow, when I sit down, he's laying down now, lying down with me. Then it was like, how do I get him to put his head on my lap? So I just started, like, we had animals, we had cats and dogs and a million other animals, and we were pretty good at training them. So I'm like, okay, so if I pat my thighs with my hands, that's going to be the cue for you. And I'm going to do it three times. And then I'm going to take your head and put it on my lap and give you lots of love. There were no treats. Your love was the biggest freaking treat that he wanted and would nicker for and follow me everywhere for. And so that was how I taught my horse to lie down. The next cool thing was we had permission to use the 500 acres behind our community. We were out in the country and we had 500 acres of hay fields that the Amish, we were on the border of Amish country in Ohio. And the farmer said, you can use it. Just keep your path. When you ride on the very edge, which a lot of farmers will tell you if they give you permission, that's no brainer. But guess what, guys, I was so obsessed with my horse that it was a path. I created a path, a dirt path, like a dirt bike path. Because I was riding every day or running on foot, I could be in 3 feet of hay, you know, growing hay. And Brandy would be loose chasing me like a dog as I'm running as fast as I can on these little dirt trails I created. We had a pond. I used to swim in the pond. I mean, he was like a dog. You see some of that in on my YouTube videos with Smokey at the old place where we'd go out on trail rides, my students and I, and I'd let Smokey loose in 500 acres and he never got too far and he'd pick up a canner and he'd be right beside me while I was riding Legend or Sundance, or I'd just whistle. We can all create that, but you got to practice it and you got to do things methodically so it becomes second nature for both of you. And then what's the big reward? Here's my horse. He could have run away from me. He could have never stopped eating the hay and blown me off, but he enjoyed me. So there's part of that play. Where's the joy in it? So much of our liberty is technique. And if you're not forcing them with two whips, one on their eye and one on their hindquarters, so they've got to stay focused, or there's some kind of operant conditioning, which is pressure and release, positive, negative reinforcement, it doesn't have to be that way. Or it's treat training. You know, yeah. How many professionals out there have these treat bags constantly? I think it's ridiculous. So for me, in what I teach and what I strive to prove, and I think I do a good job on YouTube, is the relationship is number one. Horses all want that relationship. They want to feel safe. They want to be loved. They want to belong. They want that connection. That relationship is so important to them. That's what motivates everything. And it's a hierarchy of needs. It's a higher need than food, because it meets their safety need, which is number one, and it meets their comfort level. And that's emotional. Both are emotional. That's one and two. And then food is three, and a horse isn't going to play if those needs are not met, if they don't feel secure emotionally or, you know, healthy. You know, a horse isn't going to play if they're starving, obviously. So it's play should be organic. And the way I've designed the lunging and the program is, again, it's such a massive program that connects all the dots. And for me, it fulfills everything I want to achieve with horses from the ground up to riding. You know, I want to have that play. And so the energy in the play, you see, look at all the videos with Lovey, you know, and every horse is different. You know, Zora looks at me like, I don't wanna, you know, and Sundance will do it, but she'll pin her ears. And, you know, and even when she gets jealous and butts in and says, I want to do it, she's still pinning her ears. You know, every horse is different. And, you know, I just don't want it to be forced. So you mentioned in the next question, you know, what is the harm for a horse who is forced into a frame? Everything I write, you know, you're killing them mentally, emotionally, and physically. And the biggest example I can give physically is, you know, throw a backpack on me that weighs 100 pounds and then tie it around, you know, my arms or my legs, and then make me go faster or make me jump. You know, what am I going to have to do to my body to figure out how to make that happen when I'm completely restricted? It makes no common sense. Just look at the common sense of it. The horse needs absolute freedom in movement to develop movement. And you must be able to allow that freedom to figure out where the symmetry is or isn't, so that you can help them create that level of balance to create self-carriage, which creates true natural collection, where the horse will come into their frame on their own. And you don't need to create it or hold it or make it. Bottom line. Okay. On to the last page, my dear.
Okay. All right. Do you want me to read you the question?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. How does a horse who comes from a trainer like Clinton Anderson react when you first start working with them? And how do you help them reach a state of confidence and relaxation?
Yeah. So in my experience, there's predominantly most horses have been damaged in lunging, whether it's round pen, free lunge mostly. And unfortunately, when I first got back into horses and became a clinician, one of the first, and even before I got back into horses, one of the trainers that I didn't study with them. I just studied some of their DVDs and I saw them often at the expos. I would go every year with my family to watch these guys. And John Lyons was one of the first. And he also revolutionized horsemanship in a gentler way. The problem, though, is that when you start certifying instructors and you don't have your hands on with those students that you are certifying, meaning somebody else is certifying them, the work gets diluted. And when I had my facility in Pennsylvania, I can't tell you how many horses were sent to me by people that got them at the auction at New Holland outside Lancaster. And so I was about a half an hour from Lancaster in Manchester, York, PA. And I just met so many people, you know, older people coming, women coming back, even men. I had to rehabilitate a lot of carriage and driving horses from the Amish that were being sold at these auctions. And, you know, they looked great, but they completely went ballistic when you brought them home because of the wrong practices. And so I bring up John Lyons because it's not John Lyons himself, but I met quite a few of his certified instructors. And, you know, I could not believe the harshness, and very similar to Clinton Anderson. And Clinton Anderson was just kind of up and coming back then. He wasn't a big name like he is today. So this is back in 2009. He was starting to get a name. But 2006 to 2009, those 3 years, yeah. And so with horses like that, the biggest problem that harsh methods do is they teach horses, mostly they teach them how to shut down. And that's the toughest thing. So let's look at the nature of horses as a species. I mentioned that horses are passive by nature. They do not want confrontation. They do not want confrontation. They are not aggressive. They are not hardwired for that. And so what happens is when you force a horse to, you put enough pressure on them through harsh treatment, whatever it is, ground or riding, most of our horses, I would say 85 to 90% of them are going to go into a passive behavior. So out of all three self-preservation modes, the first one they're going to choose will be freeze mode, because that is the first self-preservation mode that wild horses choose. And they're smart. They choose freeze for self-preservation and to preserve their energy for fight or flight. So we don't see that with domesticated horses too often, because we've screwed them up over time, over generations. We've ruined them. They don't even know how to go into their self-preservation modes correctly, which would be freeze and just heighten their senses and take things in. They go straight into fight or flight. Am I right? So still though, I've worked with thousands of horses. So out of the thousands of horses, 85 to 90% of them go into the freeze mode. This is the most difficult mode for people to understand or work with. Most people see the reactive horse, the flight mode, and they would rather work with what? A horse that freezes, because they think a shutdown horse is safer, and a reactive horse is scary because it scares them. But a reactive horse is transparent, and a reactive horse, transparent, they tell you and show you what they're afraid of. You just have to learn how to help them overcome that. But a horse that does not react, goes into learned helplessness, submissive, withdrawn. Oh my God, that is, as my mother says all the time, and this is an old wives tale, but it's true, still waters run deep. The quieter a horse is, the more dangerous they are, because you don't know how to read them. and you think they're okay. And a lot of these quiet horses are really sweet horses that want to do right by you and want to do what you want. And we get greedy and we take advantage of it and we ruin them. And so I've seen most horses come away from a Clinton Anderson or a John Lyons, you know, certified instructor, who just roughed up these horses and they are completely shut down. And then they just blow. And you don't know when they're going to blow because you don't know how deep the trauma runs. And again, look at the nature of horses. You know, they're passive by nature. A lot of the horses, I'd say, you know, predominantly horses that choose the freeze mode are also horses that are more introverted. They're just quieter. They're thinkers. It just makes common sense. Whereas the more hyper reactive horses, the more sensitive horses, or the more open, gregarious, extroverted horses, they wear everything on their sleeve, just like me, right? You know, just like people. So it just, that's kind of the psychology of common sense there. And it's same with people. You know, the more introverted person is going to shut down and get quiet. So does a horse. And the more extroverted is going to explode. But you keep pushing that shutdown horse or person and they will implode. They will. So, you know, how do I start working with them? Often you can't, it's counterintuitive what I'm about to say. Often movement inspires movement. And these horses are so stuck and shut down, they won't move and they won't connect. They refuse. And so movement inspires movement. And it's a little bit of this, it's a little bit of that. It's many tools and it's pulling many different approaches and exercises. It's not doing one thing. It's not consistently doing one thing or they'll just check out all over again. But the movement inspires movement principle of my work is get them moving. And it doesn't mean you move them for a long period of time because you can't, they won't, they'll shut down again. They'll freeze, they'll get stuck. But it's 1, 2, 3, let's go. You know, just getting them, snapping them out of that trigger, that trauma. I mean, they're stuck, you know, and getting them present. And then when you get them present and in that moment, how do you get them to connect to you? So there isn't one answer for that. And it is really complicated. Working with those types of horses is the hardest. And I think that's where most people are. Most people are there. They've got horses that are just stuck and they don't have the experience themselves to get these horses, to fix these horses. Okay, so let's speed this up. What does rushing a horse look like in other methods? That's simple. Going too fast and a horse that is not relaxed or confident. So I think we know what that looks like us going too fast and making, it's just too much and the horse gets rushed with it. And then everything's really fast and tight in the movement. And you can tell they might be a little more reactive because they're not confident. They're not relaxed mentally or physically. What are the top reasons you disagree with other people's lunging methods? Number one, they say one thing, what you want to hear, yet they do something completely differently, or they do what you know. They keep it comfortable for you. I think you can agree with that.
Yep.
So they say one thing, they talk about connection, they talk about relaxation, yet you don't see it. Or they only tell you what they know you can hear, you want to hear, you're able to hear. As I always say, you only know what you know, you don't know what you don't know. And this means everything we know or we think we know is based on our experience. It is not based on what we think we know. Big difference. So if you tell me, I know you're lunging, I know how to lunge a horse in your method, Caroline, you may think you know it, but until I see it, I mean, I don't know. And you only know what you've experienced. So if you haven't, and I get this often, I get this with students who are on the fence about my work. I get this with antagonistic competitors of mine, you know, that have come to my clinics before. you know, almost soliciting, trying to steal, you know, my students away. It's been crazy, you guys. But they'll be like, oh, I do that. Just like the guy in Italy, I do that. And I'm like, no, you think you do it, but you don't have a trained enough eye. You only know what you know. You don't know what you don't know. You haven't experienced all of this to know what you don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's so, all those, you know, what, hun?
I said all those trainers are jealous of you.
Oh, I don't know about that, but I just, it's, I've been through the ringer. That's why I've taken some time off to step back over the years. Cause it's been like, wow, I want to come back and into it a little differently. But yeah, they're not doing it right. You know, they're not doing it right by the horses. You know, the horse never lies. So I think I've kind of explained that throughout this podcast. Can you explain the purpose and process of two of your problem-solving strategies, driving the horse and change of direction? And this is our last question. This is good. So driving a horse is way more complicated than it sounds, driving them, than it sounds. And that's because I'm not teaching you just to drive them and make them move forward. There are many principles and factors involved for this to work correctly for the horse. And for the horse to fix a problem, whatever that problem is. And driving is important because the end goal is to create relaxation, self-regulation, and a horse that connects with you and thinks. So driving isn't just driving a horse around. You know, there's a lot more to it. And so it's a great problem-solving strategy. But getting to the point where the horse can relax and think and connect with you can take time. So it can be very difficult, harder than you think. And then change of direction. So I'm going to begin by saying changing a horse's direction, whether on the lunge, in lunging, or under saddle, it has nothing to do with controlling the horse's body, their feet, or movement. So often you'll hear other trainers say, just get their feet moving or change direction. So changing direction is a great strategy for resolving issues like escalating or getting a horse that's shut down, one extreme or the other. Change of driving and change of direction are excellent for these extreme trauma cases where the horse is overreacting all the time or completely shut down, but you have to do it correctly. And so with change of direction, we're looking to problem solve. And we're changing direction because the horse is usually either escalating, they're going from one extreme, escalating, overreacting, or they're completely shutting down and they're going into autopilot. So changing of direction means we're asking the horse to think about how and where they place their feet. We're not so concerned with speed. We're concerned with them thinking about how they're and where they're placing their feet. It's a thinking exercise. And the more we can create the rhythm in the change of direction, we start to what? Produce endorphins, which creates self-regulation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So often we'll start out with driving and we'll find out that the horse just freaks out when we're driving them. Let's say we start out at a walk and they freak out and go into a canter and a bucking rampage, and they start changing direction all over the round pen. So then you can either go back into driving and be more focused on just pushing them at a big trot until they can relax, or you might do a little bit of the change of direction to just get them to start thinking. But everything has to be rhythmic. You got to find that rhythm or it's not going to work. It can't be mindless. Well, thank you. Oh my gosh, almost 2 hours later. And we've just begun, you know, talking about this. I hope this works for your thesis.
Yeah, it will.
Are you going to be taking, like, writing this out, or are you going to be handing this podcast over to your teacher?
It's going to be a 15-page essay with 3 videos of Shiloh and I demonstrating the 3 lunges. So I'm using the interview to just help me describe what I'm talking about.
I love it. You don't need me. Oh my gosh, you guys, did you hear those questions? She doesn't need me. She can talk about this in sleep. You are amazing. I'm so proud of you, young woman. I can't say enough. You know, you make me want to cry. I'm so honored to have you as a student and at such a young age. I have another student. I had dinner with her last night for her 20th birthday. And she came to me when she was 12. And then she left when, Sydney. She left when she was 15 or 16. And she needed to, you know, being homeschooled, and she needed to just go off and, you know, grow up a little bit. And then we've come back together again. And while she's not into the horses, she'll come and ride with me, but you know, it's not her career right now. My dream when I was a teenager and struggling and having such a tough time and not having parents that could guide me like I needed, and I had my horse, you know, one of the things I promised and I is that when I grew up, I would always give back to the youth, and I would search out, or they would find me, and Sydney's one of them too, and you are, that they would find me when they needed, that I would be there for them when they found, when they were searching for the help that they needed, that I would be able to give them that, you know, that I'd be that mentor, that I'd be able to help them in whatever way I could and guide them, because I didn't have that. And if I had had the help that I hope I'm giving you, and I've given Sydney and whoever else I've touched along the way as a youngster, that I would give you that leg up and make your life easier. Because my life has been hard. Yeah, my life has been hard. I'm not the only one. But I don't, you know, everyone has to grow and learn. I'm not here to coddle you or coddle anyone. But gosh, you know, it could be a lot easier if we can learn from each other. And we have that person or those people that we can rely on. And I didn't have any of it. I didn't have any of it. I'm glad I'm here for you.
You've been a big help, because I don't know where I would be like without you, with having Shiloh and the divorce and everything. I don't know where I would be without you.
I understand. We're blessed to have each other. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, little one. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I'm going to be editing this hopefully tonight, but if it gets up and out there before next week, I don't know how soon it'll get processed and out to the podcast directories. I am doing another podcast Wednesday, April 4th, is it, or 5th? April 5th, I think, the 5th, and it's going to be on weanlings. So I'm going to wrap up it'll be my 4th podcast on developing and starting and training young horses, young horse development and age appropriate training. So that, yep, I think it's the 5th of April. That's going to be the 4th podcast on young horse development. And it's going to be focused on weanlings and babies. All right. So I hope to see everyone there, and it will be live on YouTube. And thank you. Mwah. Thank you, Sarah. Bye, hon.
Welcome.
I'll catch up with you later, okay? All right, bye. Bye, everybody.